The UN Secretary General is making an unannounced visit to Ukraine.
On one of his earlier visits, there were explosions in the capital in Kyiv, not far from where he was.
Plus, a Russian blogger outspoken against the war in Ukraine is sentenced to 8.5 years in jail.
This war is great and tragedy for all the Ukrainian people, but it is also tragedy for Russians who want to live in peace with their neighbors.
And later in the program, a town in Ukraine symbolically changes its name to an iconic city in the United States. Today is Tuesday, March 7th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Lori London in Washington. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has just arrived in Poland on his way to Ukraine. I spoke with VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir about this visit.
It's a surprise, unannounced visit, as these high security visits usually are. And he's arrived in Warsaw, Poland. He'll be in Ukraine on Wednesday morning, according to the UN. He'll meet with President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kyiv. And the purpose of the trip is to discuss the continuation of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, which is due to expire on March 18th. It needs to be renewed. And so the Black Sea Grain Initiative is the deal that was signed in July in Istanbul between the UN, Turkey, and then Russia. And it's allowed, since then, more than 23 million tons of grains and foodstuffs from Ukraine to get out to the open market through three seaports that had been blocked by Russia in Ukraine. And then the Russians, in return, signed a memo of understanding with the UN and Turkey that they're going to be able to have some of the obstacles to exporting their grain and fertilizers to the international market. You know, the Russians have been crying since the beginning of their invasion that European and American sanctions are blocking the sale of their fertilizer and grain. And that's not true. The Europeans and the Americans say they are not sanctioning those goods. But there are companies that are afraid to do business with the Russians now because they have a bad reputation. And so there's insurers and shipping companies that don't want to get involved with their cargoes. And this has been a problem. And the UN has been working very hard to try and make some workarounds for this. So this deal is due to be renewed actually next week, and it only needs Ukraine and Russia not to object to it being renewed in order to go through.
And what number trip is this to Ukraine that the Secretary General has made?
It's his third visit, and on one of his earlier visits, there were explosions in the capital in Kyiv, not far from where he was, Russian rockets fire. So the Russians were not happy that he was there at the time. So let's hope this trip goes more smoothly.
VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir. A Russian opposition activist who used social media to condemn Moscow's war in Ukraine has received an 8.5 year jail sentence today after a Moscow court found him guilty of spreading false information about the army. VOA's Steve Koresh has more.
Dmitry Ivanov, who ran a protest channel on the Telegram social network, said his statements about what Moscow calls its special military operation in Ukraine were accurate and denied any wrongdoing. Speaking in English from a glass box inside the courtroom before the verdict, he called the conflict a tragedy for Ukrainians and Russians.
This war is great and tragedy for all the Ukrainian people. But it is also tragedy for Russians who want to live in peace with their neighbors and who are suffering just now under the dictatorship. Today is a dark moment of our history, but the darkest moment is always before the sunrise. Free for Russia, peace for Ukraine.
The Kremlin says the majority of Russians support its actions in Ukraine, and opinion polls back that assertion. Ivanov said he believes that tens of millions of people inside Russia oppose the war like he does, and that many have friends and relatives in Ukraine whose pain they felt. Hundreds of thousands who disagree with the war or fear conscription have fled the country. and those who remain risk being jailed if deemed to have discredited the army, which means that people are careful about what they say. Shortly after sending tens of thousands of troops into Ukraine just over a year ago, Russia introduced sweeping wartime censorship laws, which have since been used to silence dissenting voices across society. Steve Karish, VOA News, Washington.
Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine has been felt across the European continent. VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gungadze spoke with Estonia President Alar Karis in Tallinn about the war in Ukraine and prospects for peace.
Estonia is today a frontline country. And the boosting, basically national security is the main point and main things on people's mind and electorate mind. How does this Russian invasion of Ukraine affect the population in your country?
We are all on front line, I mean, as far as democracy is concerned, because it's not only war in Ukraine, but it's also a war against our values and everything. So it's not only Estonia, it's the whole democratic world. Of course, people are thinking about war and talking about war and, of course, helping Ukrainian people and Ukraine as much as possible.
Estonia is number one in military support for Ukraine, according to its GDP. Do you think the Western community, Western countries, are doing enough to stop Russian invasion and help Ukraine to withstand Russian invasion?
It's never enough. I mean, it's also concerned Estonia. I mean, because enough when the war is over and Russia is out of Ukrainian territory, then we can start rebuilding Ukraine again. That means it does last for decades, even if a war is going to end, let's say, tomorrow. So this kind of help is needed, and we have to keep up and try to do everything. Estonia, of course, is a small country, and we can be as an example. But of course, we also encourage bigger ones to help Ukraine humanitarily, politically, and also militarily.
Estonia is on the line as well, and the danger and threats is real here as well. Right now, NATO is boosting its capacity, defense capacity around the eastern line. What are you expecting from NATO and from your allies for your country?
What we expect is that we continue to work together with our allies, and more NATO troops are present here. There is less opportunity that Russia will start a war against NATO. It's not a question of Estonia or Latvia or Eastern Flank. It's a question of attacking basically NATO. But I don't think Russia will dare to do these kind of things as long as we have a military capacity, as long as we have allies present here in Estonia and other countries.
And probably last question about, I ask many people, how do you see this war ends? And what kind of challenge do we have right now to finish this war?
Challenge is quite, it is a challenge. That means we have to give political and military and humanitarian help to Ukraine. I mean, the war ends when Ukraine says the war is over, we won, and we start rebuilding Ukraine, which might take decades. And all these mines which I put there into the Ukrainian ground, we have to get rid of these, because even here in Estonia, how many years after the Second World War, we still find mines in different places. So it's a huge work. And Estonia started already to build a new school in one of the regions in Ukraine. So eventually we have to start rebuilding Ukraine already now, not waiting the end of the war. But how and when this war ends, it's extremely difficult to say.
Thank you for this interview.
Thank you very much.
VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze speaking with Estonian President Alar Karis. Pressure is mounting on Ukrainian troops holding out in the eastern city of Bakhmut. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky vowed on Monday not to retreat, but some analysts are questioning the wisdom of ordering Ukrainian defenders to hold out much longer in Bakhmut. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
As Ukraine fighters continue their dogged defense there, some observers suggest a tactical withdrawal may already be underway. Michael Kaufman, the director of Russia Studies at the Cannes think tank in Arlington, says Ukraine's defense of Bakhmut has been effective because it's drained the Russian war effort, but that Kyiv should now look ahead. He argues the tenacious defense of Bakhmut achieved a great deal, but strategies can reach points of diminishing returns. And given Ukraine is trying to husband resources for an offensive, it could impede the success of a more important operation. Meanwhile, the Institute for the Study of War, a Washington-based think tank, says Kyiv's smartest option now may be to withdraw to positions that are easier to defend. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
And another horror story has come to light of Russian forces torturing a captured Ukrainian soldier. I talked about it earlier with Anna Chernikova, reporting for VOA from Kyiv.
So yesterday, it was this very disturbing video emerging of basically an execution of the Ukrainian prisoner of war by Russian soldiers. This was filmed by the Russian forces, and Ukrainian soldier who is the hero of this video, apparently, according to preliminary data, he was captured by Russian forces at the battle near the city of Bakhmut. So what we can see at this video is that Russian forces are asking a Ukrainian soldier who was captured to take away his Ukrainian army signs from his uniform. He refuses, and instead he is saying Slava Ukraini, which is glory to Ukraine. And straight after that, we see and hear shooting and killing of the Ukrainian prisoner of war. So this definitely had a very strong reaction within the Ukrainian society. It's a huge flash mob in social media in the support of this soldier. And also a very strong reaction from Ukrainian officials. President Zelensky, in his evening speech, paid a special tribute to the soldier, calling on the international institutions to take actions and to also provide a launch immediate investigation. And also, a Ukrainian foreign minister made a separate tweet on Twitter, calling on the International Criminal Court to launch immediate investigation of this particular case.
Beyond this, this is just one isolated incident, which there have probably been many more, and we will obviously, you and I will be talking about that in the coming days, I'm sure.
Well, unfortunately, there are reports about tortures, and also there is this situation that happened in Olenivka when an explosion happened in the place where Ukrainian prisoners of war were kept, and it's very unclear if it's ongoing or not, because Russian forces do not let international experts in, but it should take place at one point. So yeah, we might have something to discuss.
Anna Chernikova, reporting for VOA from Kyiv. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. The economy of the small Republic of Moldova is paying dearly for having positioned itself in favor of Ukraine. Dependent on Russian energy to survive, the country faces the highest inflation in Europe due to what some observers are calling Russian energy blackmail. Amy Katz narrates this report by Ricardo Marquinha in the Moldovan capital, Chisinau.
The Republic of Moldova is going through one of the toughest economic moments in its short history as an independent country. Its Ukrainian neighbor is under Russian military attack, but Moldova is under economic attack. Moscow has punished the country's pro-Western government with a drastic increase in energy tariffs. The result? An inflation rate that exceeds 30% and a country on the brink of ruin. The Moldovan authorities accuse the Kremlin of interfering in the politics of the country by targeting its economy.
In the last 20 years, I counted about 6 embargoes that Russia has imposed on different products like wine, fruits, vegetables. And these all the time happened when a Moldovan government would make a decision that it considered to be in the national interest. Then what they do is punish the people and the economy.
In Moldova's vineyards, they call this Russian blackmail. After years of embargoes and pressure, this company decided to stop selling wine to Russia. Moscow was their main client. Now, they don't sell a single bottle to the Russians.
Russia has proven itself over the years as not being the most reliable trading partner because, for example, for the wine industry, the first impact happened in 2006 when Russia has imposed an embargo on Moldovan wines. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
But a year after the start of the full-scale war in Ukraine, the working people of Moldova have taken the hardest economic hit, unable to bear the rising cost of heating and energy. In the agricultural and chronically impoverished autonomous southern region of Gagauzia, the situation has led most of the population to request subsidies to pay their electricity bills. Authorities say the situation is unsustainable.
Food products have become even more expensive. That is why when a family spends nearly half of its income on heating, and pretty much the same on food, then there is an issue to raise about how such families can physically survive. Officially, four-fifths of the population find themselves below the poverty line.
Experts say the country should diversify its energy sources and free itself from Moscow's political manipulation.
Moldova is one of the smaller countries in Europe. It is difficult to find another such country where we import all energy resources. We depend 100% on Russian gas.
1 year after the start of Russia's full-scale assault on Ukraine, Moldova has suffered severe collateral damage from the war. Artillery battles may be far away, but in Russia's hybrid war against its neighbors in Europe, Moldova is on the front line. For Ricardo Marchina in Chisinau, Moldova, Amy Katz, VOA News.
Several hundred thousand Russian citizens are thought to have fled their home country since February 2022, when the Kremlin launched the invasion of Ukraine. As we've heard earlier, critics of the war face imprisonment for discrediting the Russian military. Henry Ridgewell spoke to a Russian artist who's found sanctuary in London and whose latest work addresses the war in Ukraine.
Pavel Otdelnov says his recent exhibition at London's Pushkin House is about the humanitarian catastrophe currently unfolding in Russia, an attempt to find the signs hidden in history that have led to the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine. One painting shows old Soviet banknotes stored inside a disused missile silo, something that actually happened in the early 1990s. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, Otdelnov explains, there were several big monetary reforms, the so-called shock therapy reform, that led to the formation of a huge amount of worthless paper money. Otdelnov has just finished exhibiting in London, his new home. The 43-year-old artist grew up through the collapse of communism. His artworks parody Russia's feeling of injustice at the outcome of the Cold War. This is a narrative that is very actively used in today's propaganda, he said. This conviction that we were humiliated, that we were put on our knees, and that we are now finally getting up from our knees and showing the whole world how powerful we are. Putin's phrase that the collapse of the Soviet Union was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century is very characteristic. Shortly after launching its invasion of Ukraine, Russia passed a law criminalizing dissent against the war, punishable by imprisonment. Thousands of people were arrested. Like hundreds of thousands of other Russians, Otdelnov decided to leave the country. He was given a visa to live in Britain under the country's Global Talent Program. Otdelnov explains another of his artworks, which shows young people lost in a sea of fog. It is about those people who left their country, who do not see any prospects, who do not see an opportunity to continue to live and progress and work there, he said. The final works in the exhibition address the war in Ukraine. One shows a railway wagon in a snowy field. This work is called Cargo 200, he said. It is the refrigerated wagon that transports the bodies of the dead. This is the last work for this exhibition, and I decided to paint it when Putin announced mobilization. I thought about the fate of those people who will go to war, who will take up arms, and who will be killed. Odelnov says he also hopes to highlight the fate of other artists unable to escape Russia, many of whom have been arrested and jailed for their opposition to the war. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Novorodsky was a typical industrial city in the Donbas region that got poorer after the fall of the Soviet Union. With the war at its footsteps, city residents decided to change its name to New York to draw help and money from the West. But the investments and tourists never came, and now the few New Yorkers remaining look back fondly to their Soviet past. Jan Boy Chat has the story, with narration by Marcus Harton.
Bombs often fly over this small city with an unusual name in eastern Ukraine. New York is in the heart of Donbas, and until 2 years ago, it had a very Russian name, Novgorodska. Everything changed in the summer of 2021 when residents renamed Novgorodska to New York, its original name before the Soviets changed it in 1951. To draw help and money from the West.
At that time, we thought about investments coming here, tourists coming. But nothing has happened, except that the war started. They built and renovated the museum, but it is in ruins now. The tourists never came. New York hasn't given us absolutely anything.
Nikolaevna is one of the 2,000 people still in New York. Home to a booming chemical plant during Soviet times, New York was a typical industrial city. But since the collapse of the Soviet regime, things got harder. For many here, war is just another tragedy endured in recent decades.
Our hopes that something will change for the better died 30 years ago. About 30 years ago, the hope got lost. And to tell you the truth, this name doesn't matter to us.
Yuri lives in a potato cellar with his wife Galina and their three kids. They moved to this tiny space after a bomb landed in their yard 2 months ago and blew up doors, windows, and part of the roof of their house. Unlike her husband, Galina was hopeful that changing the name would change their fate.
But in essence, it is all about war. Who's going to care about anything else but the war?
The bombs, she says, are now part of their routine. And Ukraine's New York, too, is a city that never sleeps.
The truth is that we haven't slept for a year.
On the other side of the city, an explosion makes Nikolaevna jumpy.
You see, it's started. Now,
she's trying to fix her insomnia with a sleeping aid.
But when the shelling starts at night, the sedatives stop working. Nothing can help you.
She dreams about the days when the border between Russia and Ukraine was just a bureaucratic line. Like many New Yorkers of Donetsk, she just wants the Soviet days back. The name of the city, she says, never really mattered. For Jan Boschat, in New York, Ukraine, Marcus Harden.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.